Hello, my name's Richard Armitage, and I'm playing the role of Guy of Gisborne in Robin Hood. Guy of Gisborne is the Sheriff of Nottingham's sadistic and evil lieutenant. He's a dispossessed lord from the Norman conquests, and he is ruthless and actively clawing his way back up into the echelons of society. His main route is through the sheriff's evil regime. He is the arch enemy of Robin Hood, along with the sheriff. He's been given Robin Hood's lands to babysit while Robin Hood is away in the Holy Land, and when Robin returns and wants it back, Gisborne is again dispossessed. So, yeah, his mission is to kind of unhinge Robin from his position. Robin has, you know, an awful lot of popularity and is loved by the people for what he does, and he has always been like that before he went away. And Guy doesn't have those skills. He doesn't have that sociability. So he's kind of turned to the dark side. Professionally, he has a lot to gain by hunting Robin Hood because it's exactly what the sheriff wants. But on a very personal level, it's kind of crucial for Guy to get Robin out of the picture because whilst Robin's there, Guy doesn't stand a chance with Marian. And in the eyes of the people, he's an absolute tyrant. Gisborne works directly for the sheriff, and his view of the sheriff is that he's very useful to him. Well, they're kind of useful to each other, actually. Guy needs the sheriff desperately to give him status and occupation, and the sheriff has kind of promoted Gisborne in a very favourable way. However, his position is incredibly precarious, as the sheriff constantly reminds him. So the sheriff is quite cruel to Gisborne. He ridicules him, and he doesn't really give him an opportunity to shine. But at the same time, Gisborne is constantly being foiled by Robin and is being shown up as incompetent in front of the sheriff. So this kind of winds him up into a very tight coil. So he's constantly battling with Robin and at the same time trying to remain in favour with the sheriff, which keeps his world in constant flux. And although there's loyalty between Gisborne and the sheriff, I think that Gisborne would not hesitate to stab the sheriff in the back given the opportunity. I think the sheriff would finish Gisborne off in the blink of an eye. As soon as Gisborne became in any way dangerous to him or a threat or useless, I think that he would just dispose of him instantly. Playing the baddie is great fun. It's one of those things where in civilized society, you have to temper your sort of nasty dark side, but you get to unleash all those, you know, all those nasties that are sort of lurking around. But Keith and I have a huge amount of fun playing these dreadful scenarios that they both cook up for Robin and the men. Each time a new script comes out, the Sheriff and Gisborne storyline seem to become more dark and more manipulative and a lot more fun than the script before, and it's very exciting to open a new script and see what evil deeds they're going to get up to. When you see something which is written down in quite a comic and slapstick way, it is easy to sort of dream of it in a slightly cartoon way, but then it's kind of our job to pull it back and make it as dark as possible and let the comedy work for itself. There is a fine line between making the sheriff and Gisborne kind of comic in their evilness, because it is very funny what they do and the way they do it. I think that if the comedy is there, it will take care of itself and you don't need to play the comedy. And actually, if you do the opposite, if you play it quite straight, the comedy seems to leap out of its own accord. So I tend to leave it alone. As far as Guy having any nice qualities goes, initially, one would think no, and early on in the story, I actually thought for a moment that he might be a robot, because you never saw his hands. And I thought, actually, maybe this man isn't human, because the things he was doing were so inhuman. But actually, his love for Marian is something which is beginning to unravel him, and he's becoming more human through her, and it's actually surprising him. I don't think he quite realises what's happening to him. He's becoming human throughout the course of the series, I think. If I wasn't playing Guy, I think I would quite like to be one of the gang, and I'd either like to be Alan Dale or Will Scarlet, and the reason being, because apart from the fact that they are all, you know, really close and have a great time together, Alan Dale is the master of disguise and gets to dress up in all the different costumes and go in undercover type thing, And Will is the guy that does all the woodwork and the metalwork and creates the sort of devices that are going to spring the lock and break the safe and all those things. So, and I think both of those characters are really good fun to play. But of course, the little boy in me would want to play the hero, but the slightly more sophisticated man in me is quite enjoy playing the baddie. When I found out that I was going to be playing Guy of Gisborne, I looked back through as many of the old stories as possible of the original Robin Hood texts, of which there are quite a few because they seem to be rewritten more or less every decade or every century or so. There's Victorian versions. They go back right to the original, which was a set of poems, which were very different from the story that we know today. And it's usually written at a time of civil unrest when there's something kind of threatening the peace and harmony of the nation. But I didn't want to be influenced too much by other material. So that was really it, just those stories. I don't remember reading the Robin Hood books, but it seems to be in the kind of nation's subconscious somewhere that you just always seem to be aware of it. I do remember this series in the 1980s being on with Michael Praed and then Jason Connery, I think it was. But the main thing I remember about that was the music, which was Clannad, I believe. And it was always on a Saturday or a Sunday night or something, but it always seemed to be on the Disney version of Robin Hood, where Robin Hood's played by a fox. I don't know why I remember that, but I think there was a Lady Bird book that I had as a very young child as well. I remember reading that. It's interesting, wherever you go in the world as well, most of the rest of the world seem to know about Robin Hood as well. I was recently in Vienna at the fair, and they had an archery shooting gallery which was called Robin Hood, and basically you had all the characters and you took up a bow and arrow and you could just shoot them down. It was great fun. I won a huge cuddly Sheriff of Nottingham. I do remember sitting down with Lord of the Rings for weeks and weeks and weeks and just reading it. It started with The Hobbit. Actually, I was read The Hobbit at primary school by a very good teacher who had a great reading voice. And so I went back home and started to read all the Tolkien stuff, but I did get quite obsessed with Lord of the Rings. And in a way, the Robin Hood stories are a similar kind of historic fantasy with good pitched against evil, which is why it does transcend time a little bit. And in a modern context, particularly in this new series and this new adaptation which is being made, there's the opportunity to pick up on very contemporary parallels, particularly because, when Robin Hood is set, it's set during a time of civil unrest. The king has left the country, he's gone to a foreign land to fight in a holy war. And there are clearly contemporary resonances that are going to work in with that. And the idea of an oppressive regime, which is in place, again, is not too far away from many modern contemporary references. And the constant fear of terror, which is created by this oppressive regime, is something which is very much being picked up on in this series. And again, I think this is something which can be related to by contemporary events. This particular series has got a very modern edge to it. I think all of the writers and producers all have small children, so most of the sort of tests where they've kind of shown bits of episodes 1 and 2, they've sat their children down and said, "Do you think this is good?" And there's a limited use, I suppose, I would say, of CGI, but it's enough to kind of spice up the action, and you really see the arrows moving, and you see big explosions, and Nottingham Castle is this enormous kind of oppressive building. So in that respect, it's going to have an awful lot of energy and drive forward, which is what we come to expect now from action sequences and action movies, I suppose, because this is essentially an action-based drama. This is not the cozy Men in Green Tights that it once was. You won't see a pair of tights in this series, ever. Not officially. As far as training goes, we were brought out to Hungary about 2 weeks before filming started to something which they called Hood Academy, where we were taught to ride, to fight with swords, archery, unarmed combat, and the gang were kind of brought together to sort of bond, and that's where most of our training came from. I'd ridden for a film before, and I'd also done archery and unarmed combat and armed combat at drama school, but it's quite a different setup here because you're working with a lot of text. You have to kind of combine it with the story, so it's not just isolated to the fighting. filming Robin Hood is a very different type of thing to filming anything else because there's so much riding and fighting, and all the scenes are written in a very descriptive way, with the fight sequences spelled out very specifically. So shooting a fight sequence can take from 4 to 5 days. In fact, we did shoot a very long sequence in the forest between Gisborne and Robin, and it was an unarmed fight, and we shot it over 4 days. It's really physically exhausting. It's obviously very exciting, but you have to really conserve your energy and concentrate hard because it can be quite dangerous. Although the stunt guys that you're fighting with, because they are the people playing the guards are trained stunt fighters, if you're tired and you make mistakes, you can really injure somebody. And we've had a few near misses, and you come away with knocks and bruises. So you have to be very careful. I think the best thing about the fight sequences and all the physical side of it is, even though it's physically exhausting, when you see the final result cut together, it's really exhilarating because it looks absolutely brilliant. Because especially when all the CGI is mixed in with it and it's cut together very quickly, yeah, we all get very excited when we sit down and watch that finished. The majority of the filming takes place in Hungary, obviously. We're out in the forest for most of the Hood stuff. And we're in a studio for the castle and the back lot, which is the castle, Knighton Hall, Loxley Manor. Loxley Village is another location. So we kind of dotted around, and there are fight sequences in more or less every single location you could think of. We've been filming series one in Hungary for about 6 months. Well, it's coming up to 6 months now. Being in Hungary for such a long time, it's been brilliant fun. You know, we've all fallen in love with the place. We've kind of settled in, not as tourists or visitors anymore. It's like a second home now, although you don't really see an awful lot of the city because you spend most of the time at the studio. But we've all made friends with the local crew, and it's been great. In the little spare time that we have, we've been to see all sorts of music events and concerts. We've been go-karting with the lads. We often go to a local bar. Play tennis, go swimming. The one thing that I really do miss about being away is you just can't get baked beans. And I really miss baked beans on toast. I really miss it. Although apparently in one of the big supermarkets you can get baked beans. But yeah, I think when people travel home, because we sometimes get time off and go back, people do tend to come back with suitcases full of baked beans and Marmite. I'm quite lucky because I work with most of the cast quite closely. I film mainly with Keith, who plays the sheriff, and Lucy, who plays Marion, and Jonas, who plays Robin. So we've all become quite close. And, you know, there's a great camaraderie between everybody. And Keith regularly has parties, and we all, you know, congregate and have a lot of fun together. So, yeah, we've become great friends. The one thing that stands out in my memory was that big fight sequence in the forest, because it went on for so long, and we were there from 9 in the morning to 8 at night over a course of a week. I felt like I was constantly in that forest, filthy, you know, sweating, bitten from mosquitoes that were everywhere, really. That really finished me off. So that's kind of my lasting memory, but it was worth it because the actual final cut together sequence looks great, so it was worth it. Yeah, this is one of the first audiobooks that I've ever recorded, and I have to say it was extremely hard work, but great fun. Yeah, really, really enjoyed doing it and trying to do all the voices, and it's been a great experience in storytelling for me, so hopefully I'll do another one. Yeah, I was very lucky, obviously, recording an audiobook for something which I'm working very closely with at the moment because I still had all those characters very clearly in my head. And although I didn't really try to do impressions of the actors that I was working with, that wasn't possible in many cases. But it's a similar kind of preparation. You just have to have an idea of the story that you're trying to tell and the most clear way you can tell it. It's very difficult moving between different characters. You have to just pitch very specifically and commit to what you're doing and know exactly whose voice you're doing, when you're doing it, whether they're male or female, where they come from, and also trying to get variety into all the voices because in our story we are set very much in a kind of generic Midlands which involves a lot of northern dialects, but to make them not sound all the same, I had to sort of move them around a little bit. One question which has come up quite a lot is to do with the love triangle that seems to exist in our story between Robin, Marion, and Guy. I'm not sure whether it's existed in other stories, but it's quite prominent in ours. It's an unfair love triangle, I should say, because Marion is very much manipulating Guy. Robin and Marion both know that, but Guy doesn't. Marion is actually stirred by Guy, and it's nothing to do with his personality, but it's something to do with the fact that the choices which are available to her, because although a very romantic notion would say she should go off with a man she loves and go and live in the forest, to do that is actually kind of impractical. And as a woman in a very vulnerable position, a man with title and money, as Guy appears to be, is a much better prospect for her. And also at the moment, she has her father to think about, so there's his security. And as Guy is very much in favour with the sheriff, all her instincts, her practical instincts, I think, are leaning in that direction. An interesting thing about our story is the way that Marion is portrayed. She is very strong-willed, and she doesn't sort of swoon and fall at Robin's feet all the time. She's actually a very bright, intelligent girl. She's got a very political mind, and she's very sharp. She becomes quite a challenge, and actually, she's one of the most dangerous characters in the piece because she manages to go between the very inner sanctum of the court and sort of listens to all the politics going on, and then she kind of feeds it back to the outlaws in the forest. So she makes herself quite a dangerous character. Trying to portray the character of Gisborne in an audiobook was actually quite different from when we come to shoot it, because there is the visual representation on film which tells the story in itself, and without that, you only have the voice to express all of that evil and intention. So it was a question of just turning up the volume on all the details that I use physically and trying to get that into the voice. When we're shooting the series, we do shoot in small blocks where you do three episodes at a time and you shoot them out of sequence. So you'll be dotting around from episode 11 to 9 to 10 and vice versa. And that can be quite confusing. You have to make a very clear plan in your head. So it was a refreshing change to come in and read the audiobooks where we started with the story at episode 1 and read through to episode 4. That made a very pleasant change. Doing the audiobook was exciting, and particularly when it went into the fight sequences, because obviously you're doing loads of voices and trying to get all the action in and with as much energy and verve as possible. But we did have a bit of a problem when my horse ate one of the microphones. So that was a problem. They had to take the horse out of the studio, and he was not allowed back in.